What is that?
That is the sound of the Mississippi River right outside the station, and a couple of Canadian geese hee-honking away, as they like to do.
You know, it really makes me realize that I couldn't tell if it was geese or people talking in the background. And it is basically talking, but geese.
Yep. They were having a little scuffle, as they like to do. One of them chased two other ones, and you can hear them kind of like splash into the water. You know how they do that landing thing with their little landing gear webbed feet?
So you were recording this. My question to you is, did you have a giant smile on your face while you were doing that?
I mean, I was outside. I was next to a river. It was, of course. How can you not?
That is Charlie Mitchell.
And that is Heidi Holton.
And this is the Season Watch Pod, a weekly dip into nature, just like those geese were diving like in the river, right?
Geese were sliding on into the Mississippi.
How do you describe the Season Watch Pod?
I mean, I am hoping that this is a place where we can just take a little weekly dip into the delight of nature and experience some joy, experience some curiosity, some discovery, the stuff that kind of sustains me.
And connects us all is really the whole thing of watching the seasons of the Phenology Network, is that we don't have to be experts. We're listening, we're seeing, we're noting.
Wonderful thing about Phenology, gets you to slow down, notice these small weekly changes as the seasons move around.
So on this Season Watch, we're going to hear from John Latimer. We're going to hear some other things. We're going to learn about the different calls of an owl, which is going to be kind of fun. I just want to talk to the moment that we are in. This is the week of October 20th of 2025. And maybe I just didn't pay attention last year, but boy, this year everyone is either grumbling. It seems like a longer color season this year, and a lot of grumblings of like, oh, the color's already gone. And then that same person, like a week later, was like, oh my God, the yellows.
Yeah. And I think part of it is, we're going to say this every year, the weather's been so strange this year. There's always something strange about the weather. But we've had this very, very warm fall. To me, it's felt like August, even if it's looked like not August for a while, but it hasn't really felt or looked like September ever. And then October just hit, and all of a sudden you can see through the forest canopy.
Well, and we've had reports from people, lilacs blooming again. And John Latimer mentioned something this week about someone who told him, when he was in Grand Marais, that something was blooming that they were surprised by.
Oh.
The flower.
Was it the smooth aster he was talking about?
I don't think so, because asters are late,
that's,
right?
That's those, a late season flower,
those,
but
you see a lot of those right now, different colors, right? Or is it just purple?
The purple one is a really common, like, late season one.
Yeah.
But they are a late season flower.
Okay.
Yep.
Asters are one of the ones that I can actually recognize. So when I see them and I'm with somebody else, that's the one that I pull out. And I'm like, that's an aster right there. But yeah, but you might be seeing the same sort of thing of like, things are a little different. I have some wildflowers up in our garden. For my best friend passed away last year, and at her memorial, they gave away seeds. And so that was only last spring. And so they are now growing, and they're still growing fine, even though we've had some freezing things. And it's like such a great thing for me to see it and know it's going to come back, and just the whole thing of it. I mean, plants can connect people in such meaningful ways, I think.
They truly can.
Yeah. And she was all about, probably 200 plants in her apartment. I mean, just nuts, but in a great, great way. So we talked about color. That's kind of what we want to focus
on. Yeah. We've got, you know, the seasons are, it's definitely been an odd fall, but we do have plenty of color still out there. And one of those big colors right now is yellow.
Here's John Latimer. He's our longtime staff phenologist, which means he's been noting nature for 42 years. And this is what he had to say about the yellows.
I have some tamaracks that are approaching that smoky gold color that Aldo Leopold so talked about so eloquently. But by and large, when I look at my patch of tamarack, they run from kind of faded green to bright yellow to smoky gold. They're all levels of color right there right now. And the needles are starting to fall. I looked at some yesterday and you could see needles laying around the base of the trees a bit, but only just starting. Hasn't really gotten going in the way that it will. I remember one time driving down a road on the mail route, a cloudy day like today, and seeing this patch of bright yellow on the road and thinking for a moment, oh, the sun is shining. And then realizing that it was needles from tamaracks that had blown off of the trees and had coated the road in this little patch that made it look like a patch of sunlight on a gravel road. That will be happening before too long, maybe before we speak again. It just depends a lot on the weather in between then and now. Wind, of course, and cold will have some effect on the needles coming off of the tamaracks. But we will be watching that, and we'll let you know. Right now, I would say if you are driving by a tamarack, just slow down for a minute and appreciate how gorgeous they really are. The other yellow thing out there, well, two more things, the birches. And the birches spend like the month of September teasing us. They turn a few leaves yellow and those leaves fall off, and then a few more leaves turn yellow and those leaves fall off. All the while, the tree looks pretty green. But come October, that yellow becomes kind of an orangey yellow and really begins to flame, and the birches are just jumping out at my eyes right now, really starting to shine this bright, bright orangey yellow color. So look for the birches. That's your yellows out there. A few of the willows are yellow. There are some willows that are sort of thatched on the top with yellow. They will be among the last. A lot of the willows will still have yellow leaves after the tamaracks are bare. And it will be the willows and some of the imported, like the cottonwood, which is mostly green right now, and the Lombardy poplar, which is an import as well. They'll be yellow well after the tamaracks are done.
I love that John Latimer will just quote Leopold for fun. Also, the idea of like birches teasing us.
No kidding. I heard, though, in talking with Marshall Helmberger from the Timberjay newspaper last week, he used that same phrase, the smoky gold. And I was like, oh, I can tell you're a writer. What he said to me, and we'll have to figure this out, or maybe someone can help us, he said, I stole it from Sigurd Olsen. So is it Sigurd Olsen or is it Aldo Leopold?
Why not both?
Okay, good. There we go. So the yellows, what does it make you think of?
I feel like yellow is a very reliable fall color in the way that sometimes the oranges and the reds are not. Mm-hmm. No matter what, I feel like fall in Minnesota is going to give you some very solid yellows. The other thing I think about with yellow is even when all these beautiful fall leaves fall, leave the trees, fall yeah. leaves fall, leave. There's no way to say that without also referencing, you know, the leaves. We still have these yellow, mm-hmm. this yellow in the canopy from all the willows. And I learned from John Latimer that these trees with the kind of yellowish branches are willows. And ever since, I've had this very stupid mnemonic stuck in my head wherever I drive past a tree with, you know, those yellow stems, you know, that mm-hmm. Coldplay song, and it was all yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it goes in my head, and it was a willow. And every time, I can't unhear it. And I think of it every time I go past a willow on the roadside.
Now, I don't know if you know this or not, but like the tamarack, so do they drop their needles, and mm-hmm. do they drop them every year?
They do. They're weirdos.
Okay.
Yeah, they are deciduous conifer.
Okay.
So they're conifer, they carry cones, and they are deciduous. They drop their leaves or needles every year. Very odd behavior, but they do it. If I remember correctly, the Ojibwe story for why they do that is because the chickadee had injured its wing and couldn't fly south with all the other birds. And so it went to the tamarack and asked for shelter. And the tamarack said, no, you can't shelter here. Go on, get. And so it asked the spruce. And the spruce said, yeah, sure, you can shelter here. And the Great Spirit talked to the tamarack and said, because you didn't give the chickadee shelter, now you will feel the cold every winter. And that's why the tamarack loses its needles and regrows them in the spring.
Wow. Is there a coniferous tree that is like once every so many years it loses its...
No, I'm a scientist, so I'm not going to say an outright no, but I am going to say a not that I know of.
Okay.
Most of our conifers will you know, grow new needles every spring, and then in the third or fourth year, drop off the old needles that are probably damaged and not doing them a whole ton of good. But I don't think there are any that outright drop them, you know, every 3 years or something like that.
Yeah, I thought, and I'll ask John Latimer soon about this. I thought he talked about some tree that does it like every 4 years or something. Maybe it's maybe it's a bush, maybe it's a, or something like that. But it was surprising to me of like, oh, they don't always do this.
Interesting. Far be it from me to contradict the Latimer.
Well, no, and you can't go, you got to talk to the source, but maybe someone knows. You can email us seasonwatch@kaxe.org. We'll get on it. We'll bring it to you in another podcast edition.
Exactly. That's one of the wonderful things, at least I feel, about this job. I'm constantly learning. You know, I get things wrong and I learn new things.
Well, we all know how weird our dream world could be. So for all I know, I dreamt that. You know, we've been talking about yellows. We've been talking about noting things. We just heard from John Latimer, and we were so glad to have you on the radio with us this week, Charlie, because I wanted to pull back the curtain a little bit about how this whole network works. People hear student reports, and you'll hear some of them on the podcast, but I don't think they realize what quite goes into this whole program.
Yeah, it's a whole network of people, and you know, it's a big lift from the teachers, from us, from everyone to get it going, and especially, you know, from members who help us reach new schools.
John, Charlie joined us a few minutes ago, and you guys were talking about your week. Now, John, let's talk a little bit about your visits and you guys heading out to when you go to schools or environmental learning centers. John, you have a regular schedule each week.
Yes, I go every Thursday. I go to the Cohasset Elementary School, and then I go to St. Joseph's Elementary School here in Grand Rapids, and then I go to East Elementary School in Grand Rapids, and that's every Thursday. Other parts of the week, I tend to schedule, especially fall and spring, I try to schedule visits so that I can talk to students and talk to teachers about getting them, you know, going on phenology. I think that we profit from it educationally and informationally by hearing the voices of students from across the state. It gives us a bigger picture of what's going on, but it's also very, very good for students.
Yeah.
I talk to a lot of teachers who tell me that, you know, after having the kids outside for 45 minutes to an hour, they come back in the classroom and they're much more settled. They're less disruptive. They just have that time outside sort of settles them a little bit and allows them to be more receptive to interior learning.
Yeah, that's not a part that we talk about so much, about phenology, and I think that applies to adults as well, of like what you feel like if you've gone outside and paid attention a little bit to nature. And, you know, most of the classrooms or the camps or environmental learning centers have visited or are trying to visit at some point. Would you say that, Charlie?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've hit most, if not all of them, maybe Justice Page Middle School, although our partner Stephen Carlson visited them. So yeah, I think we've pretty much run the gamut. We have such an impressive range of teachers and students that are out there looking at nature, learning, and sending in reports. We couldn't be luckier with our network.
Yeah.
And you guys have some special visits you're doing this week too, right?
Yes. Well, many of you heard me last week speaking from Grand Marais, and I was up there visiting with Emma's classes at the Great Expectations School, which was really nice, fourth graders and seventh graders. They've got a wonderful schoolyard exploring area right outside their door. And this week, well, while I was in Grand Marais, I happened to be hiking at the Brule River, and I got to the bottom, and I was walking along, and I saw this aster in bloom, and I thought, I wonder who you are. And so I went over and I was kind of looking at it, and there's a fellow sitting on the bench right there, a young man. And I said, don't mean to bother you. I'm just checking out this flower. I'm trying to figure out what it is. And la, 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 conversation. Turns out he's a fourth grade teacher at Blake Elementary School in Minneapolis. And so I told him what it is I do. And he asked me if I would include him. And I said, I will. And so this week, Friday, I will be back in the cities. I'm going to visit three schools down there. I'm going to visit Rockford. And then I will be going to Bloomington to Oak Grove Elementary School. They have a nice little hike there. And I visited them earlier this year, but it was kind of an ad hoc sort of a thing. And it was kind of quick and just didn't really, it was too fast. And so now I'm going to actually go when they're meeting on one of their regular hikes. And I can't wait to do that. And then I'll finish the day with Nick at Blake, and we're going to start laying out some trails there. He's got, he knows about Nature Notebook, and so we are already ahead on that part, and he's going to try and get his students out and looking at nature at Blake. So
that isn't the John Latimer story, out looking at a flower.
Well, yeah, it's sighting John Latimer in the wild.
Turns out it was a smooth aster, by the way.
Yeah. Oh. And Charlie, you're headed out too. You'll be doing some stuff.
Yeah, so I'm a partnering instructor for the University of Minnesota's Phenology in Minnesota Classrooms. No, Minnesota Schools program, PIMS.
There.
So there are three kind of cohorts. Emma Adams was in last year's cohort in kind of northern Minnesota. And so I'll be going to Eagle Bluff Environmental Learning Center for a weekend-long workshop.
Where's that?
It's in south.
It's down near Lanesboro.
Minnesota.
That's a lovely place.
And so those teachers kind of gather together four times over the course of the year, and we get to talk to phenology every time.
It's what we'd like to do.
We thank all of our teachers and students that make this programming so great.
It is so great. Well said, Heidi. We do have a relatively new school here that we're going to feature this week on the podcast. It's Rockford Middle School, Cassie Kosendorfers. Ooh, I don't speak Dutch. But yeah, it's been exciting to have them on, and we want to take a listen to their report.
Hi, this is Kira,
Charlotte,
Griffin,
Chris,
Danny,
and Elijah from Ms. Korsendorfer's sixth grade classes at Rockford Middle School Center for Environmental Studies. During our class trip to Deep Portage Environmental Learning Center in Hackensack, we had partly sunny and cloudy days with a quick rain shower before our campfire night.
The Minnesota DNR fall color map listed this area of 75 to 100% color change, but this surprised us. Many of the deciduous trees were still hanging onto their leaves. We saw a lot of yellow and green with sprinkles of orange and red on the trees and a lot of brown on the ground. It was maybe more like 50 to 75% color change.
Some classmates heard frogs croaking while in their water canaries class down at Bass Pond. They think it was a green frog because Danny was able to catch one in the mud along with Becky, Grant, and Ian, who discovered a few tadpoles.
Many of us found dragonfly larvae, also known as nymphs, in various sizes. We learned that they can live in Minnesota waters for up to 5 years before becoming flying adults. They are bioindicator species because they are sensitive to water quality and can be used to monitor the health of Bass Pond.
Many of us got to visit the bog for the first time. The tamarack trees still held onto their green needles and have yet to turn yellow.
Miss Hunza and Miss Korsendorfer were up early on our last day for a sunrise hike around Bass Pond when they heard a barred owl hooting, "Who cooks for you?" repeatedly just before dawn. That is all for this week. Thank you for listening.
Bye!
Also talking about the yellows.
Yeah, for sure. And giving us resources there from the Rockford School.
I know. They were Fall Color Finder.
Mm-hmm.
It's a go-to.
They sound like they're professionals. They've been doing this a long, long time or something.
Right? And then they drop the word bioindicator species.
Mm. Yeah. Mwah. They were talking about, in terms of water quality, right?
Yeah. The dragonfly nymphs being a bioindicator species for water quality. Love that.
That's, again, say it once more.
Bioindicator species.
That's your band this week.
Am I going to come out with a new band every week?
Maybe. We'll see what happens.
Oh, good. Yep.
What also stood out is, of course, the call that they did at the end there.
The barred owl?
Yeah. So let's visualize a barred owl for us. And what do you know about owls?
He's a big gray boy.
Big meaning how big?
If you think about like a great horned owl, like a smidge, to use the technical scientific term, it's about a smidge smaller than a
great
horned owl.
Okay. But you need to help me on this, okay? Uh-huh. Is a great horned owl like the size of a mid-sized dog? I mean, I know it's not the same kite type of thing, but
ooh.
I mean, I don't, give me a reference to that because you're giving me.
Okay. Hold on. I'm picturing farmyard animals. So if you think about like a chicken, it's about the size of a chicken.
The great horned.
Probably more the barred. The great horned is probably a little bit bigger.
All right.
But you know, a chicken walks with, it's kind of like stooped over all the time.
Yeah.
And owls perch kind of like upright. They've got good posture.
Yeah.
Whereas the chickens and the hawks tend to be more stoopy.
I just sat up when you said that. I should have better posture.
As I just slink down further in my chair.
Yeah. Okay. So they have good posture. The barred owls are smaller than the great.
Yep, just a little.
There. Okay.
And then, of course, they don't have the great horns. They don't have the little ear tufts that we're used to with great horned owls. Great horned owls then have like a little bit more of a yellow gold face mask, facial disc, if you're going to go all owl morphology. The barred owl also is distinctive. Around the head, it's kind of got like a circle stripes going.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the breast, it has vertical stripes. So it's got the horizontal stripes at the neck and then the vertical stripes on the breast. And that is why it's called the barred owl. And it's a handy way to identify them.
Ah, okay. I don't just, there is a barred owl around our house and I absolutely love it. It's like, it's usually like either right as I'm falling asleep or when I wake up very early, you know, for the morning show. And it's just, but I have seen it before. I have thought that perhaps someone stole a baby and held it in a tree before because of the sound.
Uh-huh.
But I don't see it often. It's only the sound that I hear.
And that's, of course, very normal for owls. They're nocturnal. But sometimes you can, if you are very talented. Ooh, talented. That's a bad pun. If you're very talented at doing impressions, you can call them to you. If you make a good call, sometimes they'll come to you. And especially in the winter, because they're perching in the trees and they're bare branches, and sometimes you can see them silhouetted against the sky, you have a better chance, I think, of seeing them in the winter. But of course, you are always much more likely to hear them. I found a fun statistic.
Okay.
I love a statistic. And it's that Minnesotans, about 38 to 87% of us are able to identify a barred owl by its like signature "who cooks for you" call, which is the one that we heard from our Rockford students. But
wait, what was the statistic again?
38 to 87% of Minnesotans were able to identify a barred owl individual using only the final four notes of the song.
Okay.
"Who Cooks for You All."
Mm-hmm. Like even 38 is pretty good.
Right?
Yeah.
I know. I want to see that statistic up against the other states because I want to beat Iowa and Wisconsin and everything. But that
Dakotas,
might just be me.
We should beat the Dakotas too.
Yeah. I live on the east side of the state, so I'm not really worried about the Dakotas.
Okay. Are we going to take a listen?
Yeah.
That's the one we might hear the most or recognize.
Yes. So that's kind of the classic one, is the "who cooks for you? Who cooks for you all?" That is the classic, but they have a variety of different calls. They are one of the like most varied in their vocalizations of all the owls. I think that the names of all the different calls they use are kind of fun. So you've got the two-phrase hoot, which is all eight phrases, "who cooks for you, comma, who cooks for you all?"
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You have the one phrase hoot, which is just the "who cooks for you all." And then there's the ascending one where they go, where they're like kind of revving themselves up. Always love that one.
We don't even need to play it. You did such a good one.
Oh, no. But let's play it anyways.
Okay, all right.
Ooh, I love them.
That's the ascending hoot.
The ascending hoot. Uh-huh.
If you live in Minnesota, you say hoot.
You hoot. And then this is one that I hear a lot, kind of, especially at dusk, after dusk, the caterwauling, when you get a pair going, and then they don't only just do the like hoo hoo with your mouth kind of in an O, but then they start doing the ah, ah, ah. It's, love it.
You know, kind of like the geese that we heard earlier. I mean, you really, if you close your eyes, it feels like they're talking to each other. There's right? something going on here.
I mean, I think that's the closest you get to the sound of monkeys in a Minnesota forest. It's like yeah. a whoo, whoo, ah, ah, whoo, whoo.
Right.
It's so good.
That's caterwauling.
Yes, that's caterwauling.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Then you have, I wasn't able to find a recording of this one, but the inspection call, which is just a whoo-ah.
Oh.
You don't need any of the hoo-hoos. You just got the whoo-ah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The last one I wanted to talk about is when you know you're really, really close to the owl. It gives an alarm call, and that is the scream.
That's the one that I heard that I thought someone was hurt.
Yep. Yep. And I mean, that is kind of the vibe behind it is if you hear that one, you're right on top of it or close to a baby, or maybe you're handling it. And then they also will like give the clack clack of their beak that try to scare you off. I love a barn owl. They're just very expressive.
We learned about owls today. It is the Season Watch Pod. Here's ways that you can help. Tell someone else about it.
Yeah.
That's all we need.
Find us some friends.
Yeah.
That is friends with a PH for phonology.
And if you have some questions, send them our way. What are you noticing? Pay attention. See if you can hear some owls this week.
Yeah.
Season Watch is made possible by the inspiration of 42 years of phonology from John Latimer. It's our new podcast available on most podcast platforms as well as our website, kaxe.org. It's made possible by people-powered radio listeners like you who support independent media. Funding for student reports is provided by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Sign up for a Season Watch newsletter at our website, kaxe.org. Season Watch, you don't have to be an expert. Let us know what you're seeing that's changing in nature. Email seasonwatch@kaxe.org.